some of you from last time. And so formally, I think it is better to introduce one another. We will start as usual from our side here. I'll start with myself to the member, and we'll go that way. My name is Ngabang Ngobo from the ANC. I chair this Committee on Science and Technology.
I am Chair, Honourable Members. I am Nkosi Mwelo Nonkonyana, also from the ANC, or Tambo region in the Eastern Cape, a member of the committee.
Hi, I'm Marion Shin, a Democratic Alliance member of the committee.
Thank you, Chair and members. I'm Linda Ratinjo, the Week of Science and Technology from the Eastern Cape. I'm the member of the Afghanistan.
Next, member.
Dumelang. Bagaetsho ke Popi Mochumi. Ke tlhaga ko provinceng ya Gauteng, ko regioneng ya Tshwane, ke leloko la African National Congress, le la komiti e ke leng mo go yone ka se sebaka, ke a leboga.
Good morning, I'm Renee Osborne Mullins, the researcher for the committee.
Introduce yourself, you are too far from me.
Chairperson, I'm the most obvious one, Committee Secretary Shanaz.
From behind, yeah, I think. We've got here the study group secretary, Thomas. Behind me is our study group secretary. Introduce yourself from the department. You don't belong to me. You belong to Dr. Kobela.
Good afternoon, honorable members. My name is Thomas Al-Sahada. I'm the Deputy Director General in the Department of Science and Technology.
Right, now.
Thank you, Chairperson, members of the Committee on Science and Technology. My name is Matlotleng Matlo, CEO from the Africa Institute. On my left-hand side is Mr. Ngobeni, Director of Publications. On my right-hand side is Mrs. Elsie Maritz. She is our Chief Financial Officer.
Oh, those are not part of, okay, they are from the ASAF group, I think. Right, I think we, last time, I think we must make a comment before you start. We were very disappointed last time that you never turned up and you even not followed up the PFMA expectations and procedures. And so... I have been tasked by the committee to make a strong letter to you and the relevant authorities for what happened last week. Actually, I'm going to China tomorrow. We have had to schedule all these three entities, including yours, because of your problem last week. And actually, I expected that all these reports are finished by the 27th. And so it has greatly inconvenienced us. Now, that is why we've got a pile of reports in one day. Normally, we are supposed to take one report per day. I'm sure members with me that it was quite a very, very big disappointment, because annual reports are very important. They are as important as strategic plans. But annual reports are even more important because they are about accounting how much you have met challenges during the year, so that we can look into that as Parliament, so that in the following year we are able to address challenges that may have cropped up on the way. So if you then send people who are by PFMA not accountable to Parliament, then you are making a very, very difficult situation from Parliament. But we'll engage in that today. It's not for that. Today is for you to address us as to exactly what you have done. Thank you.
So, President, thanks very much. And once again, apologies for last week's incident. Just an introduction, the map of Africa showing the scope of the work that is expected of us. Our mandate requires us to undertake research, disseminate information, and report on events on the African continent. Okay. Our vision is to be an indispensable African voice on African affairs, and we have a mission to produce relevant research reports aimed at informing sustainable political and social economic development in Africa. And our position statement is that through development, through knowledge, and our brand promise is to be Africa's knowledge resource. Our values, brought together, create the acronym PRIDE: participation, responsibility, integrity, development, and excellence. Very quickly, we exist through an Act, Act 68 of 2001, and our current research agenda, finishing next year, is concentrating on continental integration on the African continent. Our mandate is to produce research and policy development support in pursuit of programs that contribute to the development of the African continent, to conduct research and training on programs that foster continental patriotism and promote increased awareness and understanding of the African continent amongst the people of South Africa and across the globe, and to establish and maintain networks in Africa and globally which will contribute to the peace, development, and prosperity of the continent. We also seek in our objectives to promote knowledge and understanding of African affairs using mainly social scientists, acting in concert and across various disciplines through training and education on African affairs. We collect, process, and disseminate information on African affairs, provide advice, facilitate appropriate action in relation to collective needs and opportunities and challenges related to the continent, but also seek to promote awareness and consciousness of Africa at the grassroots, not only within academic communities, but particularly in civil societies, and we do this in various ways. We have a research division which is divided into five units: peace and security, sustainable development, governance and democracy, science and technology, and a policy unit which we have now reformed into a knowledge transfer and skills development. We have a publications division, library and documentation division, an outreach and international liaison division, corporate affairs, finance and administration, and human resources. So that's seven divisions in all. These were the managers and executives during the reporting period, April 09 to March 2010. Next slide. Here we give an indication of the research outputs during the course of the year. We produce monographs, occasional papers, policy briefs, journal articles, books and book chapters. And we also participated in conferences, seminars, workshops, and appeared in the media as well. There's a pie chart indicating a division of the work that was done, amounting to about 115 outputs in total. In the unit Democracy and Governance, we indicate some of the work that we are tasked to undertake, looking at international partnerships, particularly the relationship between Africa and different countries across the globe, but also in certain cases, looking at Africa in relation to regions as well, the EU amongst others. We look at the African peer review mechanism also and see the extent to which this important process on the African continent is undertaken. I think there are about 30 countries right now that have signed up to the African peer review mechanism. We also track the democratization process across the African continent. And in terms of sustainable development, we want to see the links between economic, environmental, and social issues of development on the African continent. And of course, to the extent that the African Union has made the diaspora one of the, or the sixth region of the African continent, we are interested in the relations between Africa and the diaspora and how we can contribute to each other's development. We just show some of the work that was undertaken under this unit. We have done work, amongst others, looking at the nature and role of South Africa's engagement in the reconstruction of Zimbabwe. We look at issues of governance through the use of information technology, particularly at the level of service delivery and the extent to which information technology can be used to provide services to the people. And also explore some of the governance models, leadership issues, that exist across the African continent. Within peace and security, again, very concerned about the large number of conflicts that have erupted on the African continent, particularly in this decade, but also recognizing that there has been some level of reconstruction and the breaking out of peace in a number of countries. So here, again, we want to understand reconstruction and development programs in countries like Ivory Coast, Liberia, Sierra Leone, the DRC, amongst others. Migration on the African continent, I think in South Africa a few years ago we saw the impact of migration and we continue to feel it, and the extent to which countries are able to maintain migration regimes, but also security and the costs around this, but also dealing with these issues, if possible, at regional levels. If you take, for example, within SADC or ECOWAS, that they have regional migration regimes. Of course, the linkages between crime, human insecurity, and their impacts on regional integration. I think if we just look at the recently released Mo Ibrahim Index, it does speak to some of these issues. Management of trans-border resources. I think that the NRF was just speaking about the impact of climate change, environmental impacts, and we are quite aware, particularly on the African continent, that the use of resources in one country impacts on another. We get water from Lesotho, and what they do upstream impacts on us downstream, forests and how we manage these forests. Some of the projects in this area, and we're not reporting on all of them, many of them are in the annual report, is evaluating Africa's capacity and multilateral agencies, particularly the AU and the sub-regional organizations, in dealing with conflict issues and crisis. I think we've done some work, for example, on Sudan, amongst others, the DRC, Zimbabwe, but also what happens, importantly so, for post-conflict recovery and reconstruction. And also, even though we work in separate units, there are linkages between what happens in terms of post-conflict recovery and democratization. If you are slow in this recovery, it does have impacts eventually on democratization. And some countries where there are challenges like this would be Ivory Coast, for example, where there's a stalemate between the so-called rebel groups and the government, which has meant the postponement of elections because they are unable to deal with peace and security issues. In sustainable development, again here, it's how we make effective use of resources, both natural and human resources on the African continent, to ensure that development does take place. I think the recently ended summit in the U.S. of the UN looked at the extent to which Africa is performing with regards to the Millennium Development Goals, And unfortunately, compared to other continents, we're not doing very well. But I think there's also a challenge around the exploitation or the second scramble for resources in Africa, where much as people might suggest that we have a strong relationship with China, most of the materials that we export to China are in the raw state and create very little jobs on the continent. Neither do they lead to enhancement of human resource development. I think we also want to look at different actors in the development process. And I think on the African continent, having hit the 1 billion mark, it's a very young population, and there are major challenges around issues of education, jobs, cohesive societies on the African continent. And these are some of the things that we intend to look at, but also how we deal with poverty and the extent to which various governments' goals of poverty eradication can take place. We looked, and this was a continuation for some of the work that we had done in 2008, 2009, looking at a number of regional economic communities, the East African community, the Central African region as well as within ECOWAS, and some work in SADC, looking at the extent to which resources are being used for the development of nations that at an individual level, but across the region. I think there was work also done on informal trade between the borders of Ghana and Togo, and this work was extended to looking at work between places like Cameroon and Nigeria. And of course, within Southern Africa, this is a very important economic activity that we have an interest in, and we are asking what lessons can Southern Africa learn from West Africa in terms of trade patterns. Science and technology, obviously, with a mother department that looks at science and technology, we've been asking questions of what contribution can we make, particularly from a social science perspective. I think the idea is not to replicate anything that is done in this department or in other science councils. Most of us are social scientists, but the question is, to what extent can you use the social sciences, looking at knowledge being holistic, to contribute to human development, and how can you take science and technology and make it contribute much more to human development? In this regard, we want to look or plan to look at Pan-African issues. Some of the things we're looking at, for example, would be intellectual property issues in South Africa. We've just got an act which has come in related to the use of intellectual property from publicly funded resources, and we're trying to see what the links are in this regard with the Pan-African Organization on Intellectual Property. I think part of the work that we did, particularly in South Africa, was to look at migration patterns in urban areas and the impact and the conditions that people stay in, having come from other countries into South Africa. Work was done in Cape Town, work was done in Durban, and this was compared with a number of African cities, particularly if you look at that Africa has crossed the 50% mark in terms of urbanization, and you have huge sprawls of informal settlements, standards of sanitation and hygiene being a concern, and health also being an issue in this regard. I think we also looked at food security issues. In Durban in particular, the researchers went to look at the big food market in Durban and the challenges around the local municipality wanting to change that into a mall and a transportation node. We've established a science and technology advisory team to help us look at some of these issues. We have an internship program, a fellowship program. We also work with young graduates and scholars trying to interest students in South African universities in particular to take an interest in the global African issues. I think many people would say that South Africa for a long time has been disconnected from the African continent, and the challenge for us is how we create an interest and make people understand that we are linked to this continent geographically and in many other ways. We have guest lecture series. Many of our researchers have conducted lectures across a number of universities in South Africa, but also internationally. And we also have guest lecturers who come from other countries and lecture in South Africa. Towards the end of the financial year, we had a professor from Uganda who launched our inaugural Achimafeje Memorial Lecture. We have a number of capacity building programs where we have the AYISA campus lecture series where we go deal with research methodology, but from a practical aspect where we say the researchers have been into the African continent, have conducted field work, and we try and share this knowledge with students and lecturers in a number of universities, but also to encourage the spirit of conducting research, which is a challenge in some universities. We've done a bit of work with a number of departments, particularly the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. There is an ongoing project looking at the Gulf of Guinea, particularly the resource base in countries, you know, along the west coast of Africa, all the way up to Angola in terms of the Gulf of Guinea, oil in particular, marine resources, but also challenges of crime, you know, transnational crime, particularly coming from Latin America in terms of drugs that are beginning to find their way into some countries like, for example, Guinea-Bissau. We worked with DECO on the Binational of South Africa and Nigeria, 10-year anniversary. We helped them with the civil society interaction and conducted a program at the universities of South Africa, Limpopo, as well as KwaZulu-Natal. We participated in the annual DECO conference, normally held in November, and we've been invited to partake in the one coming this year. With the Department of Defense, there is a project where we got funding from the government of Norway to look at gender issues within the security establishment. This project is at three levels, with South African level, SADC level, and at the continental level, and we've worked at all these levels, trying to assist in terms of integrating gender issues, particularly to do with defense. And for South Africa in particular, because of the increasing number of peacekeepers or peacekeeping missions that South Africa is involved in, these issues arise as a major issue. And in fact, in August this year, we participated with the Department of Defense Gender Conference. Support to universities we've spoken about. These are just, I mean, I've mentioned some of these projects. Maybe just to run through a few of them. I think the North Africa project is a continuing one where we found that we were not doing much work in North Africa. And we got a number of researchers in North Africa and have done some work with them. And the idea is to conclude this project with a conference next month in Cairo, Egypt. The Standard Bank project was a project we did for Standard Bank looking at transnational communities, transnational migration on the African continent, but also migrant communities from outside Africa, Chinese communities, Indian communities on the African continent. With the Social Science Research Council based in New York in the United States, we did some work on HIV/AIDS and migration in the SADC region. The State of Africa is work that we hope to publish later on in the next month or two, looking at about 15 issues across the African continent. The AYISA autobiography is ongoing work looking at trying to undertake a study on the 50 years of existence of the African Institute. And then the others are just a number of conferences and engagement with the media that we're involved in. We've spoken already about our research outputs. From the publications division, we publish an accredited journal under the Department of Education. We have four issues per year. Last year was issue of volume 39. We have a number of books that we published during the course of the year, peer-reviewed to meet the standards of the academic community. We also published a report on a Zimbabwe conference that we've done the year before. We published four occasional papers. Again, these are peer-reviewed. And then a number of policy briefs and monographs as well. From the Library and Documentation Service, we've held the library since the 1960s. When we did a stocktaking last year, we realized that we have just over 95,000 books. That is a breakdown of the collection that we have. And the library also does hold sector or you know, specific seminars on library issues. Our librarians are also members of a number of library associations nationally, Africa-wide, and international as well. We have an outreach program to schools where we try and speak to them about African issues, and last year we managed to visit a number of schools. Normally the schools are brought together, so it wouldn't be visiting 121 schools, but maybe you might bring about 20 schools in a particular region, and in the annual report there is a map showing the various schools that we visited in the Western Cape, Northern Cape, Free State, and I think Limpopo. We have developed a geoportal and a geographic information system on African issues where you can click on a country or a map and it will give you information about that country. We are networking with a number of GIS partners, including the Department of Land Affairs and Rural Land Affairs and Rural Development. We have a collection of maps, numerous maps on the African continent, some country-specific, some sub-regional, and some continental. We also publish Africa Fast Facts and Africa in Focus, again using maps to provide information on books, and Africa at a Glance as well does help provide information on books. If you look in the annual report, in the page that comes out, we use maps and give you fast facts on different African countries. Corporate affairs largely assists us with council activities, but also a number of special projects. We have, because South Africa is either the third or fourth most represented country in terms of diplomats, we have a huge number of diplomats in Swane, and we try through them to make sure that ambassadors, high commissioners, heads of diplomatic missions are able to speak to the general public and the academic community in Swane, and we have this as a partnership with the city of Swane and use their facilities. 2 weeks ago, for example, we had the Nigerian High Commissioner speaking about Nigeria at 50 years. And some of the ambassadorial fora that we've had have looked at investment opportunities in Kigali, in Rwanda, Kinshasa, in the DRC. The EU ambassador came to speak to us about what now happens after the 2009 treaty in the EU on Lisbon, which is making this region move much closer to a supranational organization. The role of African women as mothers and leaders, the host High Commissioner was the High Commissioner of Botswana, and the Minister of Social Development, Minister Molewa, also spoke at this meeting. Africa and the EU, we had two programs on this. The ambassador of Sweden, at that time Sweden had the presidency of the EU. And these are just some of the other kinds of seminars that we have hosted last year on the 25th of May together with NEPAD, the City of Swane and the Department of Arts and Culture, as well as the Northern Flagship Institute. At that time, they have changed their name now, hosted a day on education and culture, the Africa Day at their Museum of Culture in Swane. Next slide. We've spoken about the Standard Bank project, the DECO project. We've spoken about the Achima Feje. I think we've spoken about a number of this, maybe just a conference on scholarly publishing in Africa was also conducted last year, and we have published a book resulting from this, again showing the challenges where Africa produces only about 3% of global publishing, tied also, of course, to the huge brain drain of Africans who are leaving the continent. If you're an African and you publish in the United States, it's not counted as publishing in Africa because you publish in the U.S., So although there are a large number of Africans working in the diaspora, unfortunately, their output is not counted as an African output. Okay? I think we just put a business environment analysis just looking at some of the challenges that a small organization like ours faces. Of course, there's increasing competition, but also opportunities for cooperation from universities, research consultancies, and non-governmental organizations. The issue of Africa globally and the importance of Africa means there is a lot of competitors in this area and specialized institutions also working on this. I think we recognize that we can't continue to depend solely on government for our funding. Presently, we get 91% of our funding from government, and our council has recently said we've got to seek to see where we can get money from other sources. I think that we've also had challenges around the issue of remuneration within the organization. Sometimes people say that they would rather stay in other organizations, or we get people who then leave us. So we find ourselves sometimes training people for other organizations, in a sense. If we lose them within South Africa, maybe we don't complain too much, And we've recently lost some of our researchers who were from other African countries who were taken up by the AU, the Economic Commission for Africa. So we're seeing movement, and I think it seems to be part of the order of the day moving forward. I think that we are proposing a number of solutions. There's been a debate about the location of the Africa Institute. I think it has been suggested we are a science council, and that ideally, indeed, we should stay with the DST, like sister organizations like the Human Sciences Research Council. Other people say, well, we should be with DECO. But this, I think, seems to be a settled matter for now. We hope we will let sleeping dogs lie on this one. I think that the idea of looking for partners, and we've signed MOUs with a number of research organizations, including sister organizations like the HSRC, but also research institutions of the African country, on the African continent, some in Zambia, Nigeria, Egypt, as well as outside the African continent, to see how partnering with these organizations can help us work even better. The work that we've done on North Africa was done with a partner organization in North Africa, which assisted us in getting researchers from Libya, Tunisia, Morocco, and Egypt. I think that we need to sharpen our communication and marketing strategy in terms of the products that we produce in order to create greater visibility, but also allowing many more people to know the work that we do. We had an institutional review in April this year, and we've looked at their recommendations, and in many regards we agree with what they have suggested, and in our strategic plan moving forward we will seek to implement their findings. I think that in terms of the usage of our resources, 55% of our funds go into employee-related costs. We've also gotten some assistance from the NRF in terms of assisting us with the interns that we have. And we are seeking to see how we can continue to make more effective use of resources for training and development of our staff. Here we show our employment equity targets and the distribution across the organization, where we have just over 60 employees. So in a sense, we're not a very big organization. And one of the things that we've tried to do, because we can't cover the whole African continent from the resources that we have, we're beginning to create partnerships and commissioning some of the work to be done by other people. And of course, most of us only speak English on a continent where Arabic, Portuguese, Spanish, and French cover a bigger portion of the continent. And it's a challenge about how you work on a continent like this. And if you look at the countries that we have covered, most of them have been English-speaking countries. Here we give an indication of the demographics in terms of distribution of both gender as well as race distribution, mainly South Africans, but we've also had staff from Kenya, Zimbabwe, Nigeria, Lesotho, at Egypt at one time or another. We give here an indication of qualifications of various stuff, from people with PhDs to this is mainly in the research area, but some of the executive management as well, in terms of the qualifications of our staff members, and we are continuously seeking improvement, just like the HSRC, that staff members should go on training, and the director publications on my left-hand side has enrolled for a PhD at the Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University. In terms of finance and administration, the idea is to improve our control environment and ensure that we comply with legislation, effective use of our budgets, compliance with GRAP standards, which I assume is generally recognized accounting principles, achieving financial excellence also through effective and efficient use of our resources, seeking to mitigate our top risks. We continuously update our policies. I think working very closely with both our internal and external auditors, it's a continuous process for us. I think management of our resources safeguarding of assets is a continuous challenge, but we work on this as best as we can and try and educate staff about the impact of what they do, particularly sometimes with moving assets from one office to another, and when the AG comes, they can't be found. I think also maintenance of our IT infrastructure. We've been growing gradually, and we've had to increase our resources in this regard. We got human resources because we have many more people, and our hardware and software has increased. And also trying to see how we can use IT to particularly improve our business efficiency. With regards to the control environment, I think we've spoken about this. We had challenges in the past. We've sought to improve this. If you look, starting from 2005-2006, we had qualifications and disclaimers for the past 2 years. We've had unqualified audits, even though there might be one or two matters of emphasis that the Auditor General has asked us to keep an eye on. I think this is assets. There was a bit of wasteful and fruitless expenditure where there was in a particular case because we didn't have an SLA with a travel agency. As well as the asset register. I think there were challenges with the asset register. One or two things about leave, where people might have taken leave and not necessarily, or the forms might have had wrong dates on them or after the fact. We now have an electronic system which has improved the situation. I think there's a specifics on financial performance where the CFO wanted to emphasize the accounting system that we use, and to ensure that we note that our surplus has a combination of things within it. Some of it is committed funds, but also that some of it is contingencies for retirement benefits, and the fact that we're also moving from a defined benefit fund for pension to a defined contribution where the risk is more now balanced, whereas before it was more on the employer. I think this is also an indication of some of the issues where distribution around plant, property, and equipment in terms of intangible assets and what we had in terms of our operations and achieving of objectives. I think here it shows the minuscule, whereas in previous years we had a lot of rollover funds, we've managed to substantially reduce this and ended the year with only about 371,000 rands. It shows also the revenue that we had over the year, some of the income that we generated, and that shows also the income that we received from the Department of Science and Technology. So I think this is not very clear for those who might be at the back, but it's in the slides that we created, which shows the relationship between our budget and the actual, in terms of the different subdivisions in the organization, and as we've said before, there was a slight amount of money that we had over the course of the year that was not expended. So we've virtually wiped out the rollover funds that we had for the past financial year. Sorry, just the other slide. Again, just showing pictorially, much more clearly, budget and actual. So this is
sorry.
Oh, okay. Apologies. There's the relationship between employee costs, operational costs, general administration.
What does employee-related
mean? Salaries, travel allowances, anything related to. And because we have researchers going into the African continent, we have quite a high amount spent on that. People are in the field for about 3 to 4 weeks. Okay. So I think this is just an indication around the variance between what we had projected and what we then spent across the different line items. And that is stays within the acceptable limits of 7.6%.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Let me see the hands now. So I'll start that side and come this way. I will start with Bashomi and we'll come this way. And I'll be the last one.
Thanks, Chairperson, and let me appreciate the presentation. Briefly, the presenter indicated that there are departments that have been involved in the whole process. For instance, he mentioned that the Department of Education, the Department of Land Affairs and Social Development, I believe, because there was a mention that Honorable Minister Molewa addressed. I missed that bit. What I'd like to find out is the involvement of other departments that for instance, you are doing their job, for instance, the Department of Police, the Department of, a number of departments, I won't mention them, I believe you know them. The other thing, let me commend you for having obtained an unqualified report, audit report. But as I go through this, I find a number of discrepancies, I don't know whether to call them discrepancies or what, that were raised by the Auditor General. And I wonder how the new, and some are very serious. The most serious ones are the ones that have been mentioned, raised by the Auditor General that relates to the non-compliance. The non-compliance with the relevant acts, for instance, non-compliance with certain sections of the PFMA treasury regulations, which I find very, very serious. The other one relates to those huge amounts that resulted in a wasteful and fruitless expenditure. But I would maybe want to get an explanation or clarity with regard to that. An amount of 1.3 million, and we put it that way, that led to, I think it relates to the procurement that was not properly followed. I would like to have a clarity on that. And the other one relates to, I think it's a penalty that was instituted by the SARS for late payment and for compensation fund, workmen's compensation fund. Those are the clarities that I would like to get with regard to that. Thanks, Chairperson.
I'm thinking, I don't know what you think, honourable members, but I was thinking that you must just table your questions, all of them, and then we can break up for lunch, and then when we come back, then they can respond. Is that fine? Okay.
Right.
So they will just table the questions, throw them down, we can caucus them during lunchtime, and then we'll come back so that we... When you have caucused them, you'll just flow when you come back, so you finish quick. Yeah. Okay, carry on.
No, thank you, Chair. First, I'm a bit disappointed by the leader of this institution in his tendering of an apology for their non-attendance. I would have expected at least a brief explanation, not just to say our apology. What happened last week. I don't think that is correct. Secondly, Chair, I've been trying, as I've been looking in this document before I came here, and something was raised by the CEO that they are also working with civil society. And I've been struggling to get that here. I'm raising that because we are talking about a very important entity. within the context of science in Africa. I'm a bit excited, in fact. But I'm a bit disappointed. We are to go and do oversight in our constituents. First, if I take this book, for me it's fine. I read here, understand. But for an ordinary person who is then supposed to be understanding the role of this institution, I find it a bit academic for me. Maybe I'm the only one that has got that problem. The reason that I'm raising that, as much as you are dealing with science in Africa, I would have thought that, because there's a section that I have missed here. I find your presentation a bit, maybe it is supposed to be diplomatic through you, Chair, because this is Parliament. But truth be told, among other things that we've got a problem with here in South Africa in particular, is the issue, if you're talking about safety and security, you are a bit silent on the issue of xenophobia. Maybe that's not your brief. Maybe I'm subject to correction. Pardon my ignorance. You are a bit silent. We are to go and pay oversight on ordinary people on the street. And I would have thought that maybe this institution, as a result, I want to make a recommendation around this, if that is possible. That would you be able to just have a simplified version of the role of your unit for ordinary people to understand? Because this, for me, is it's quite important. Because we can't just be talking, because at the end, it's these ordinary people that are to understand what is it that you are trying to do and what is their role and the impact of all the negativities that have happened in South Africa that have got the potential of downplaying all what you think you want to do. Again, I'm saying my apology for ignorance of on your mandate. Briefly, it's too much. It's a bit academic. It's for intellectuals. But for us, as members of Parliament, we understand it. Maybe it's our responsibility to simplify it, which I don't think it is. The last one has got two. Yeah. I'm a bit disappointed. I will take on to what the Honourable Mushumi has raised on the auditor's report. On page 88, it's reflecting on your bad style of leadership. It says, accounting authority has not designed and implemented adequate controls. I'm not going to read them. You may have an unqualified report, but that, for me, it reflects on the leadership style of yourselves and the institution in terms of controls. I would appreciate it, maybe. Just to explain to us as the committee, what is it that you think you are to put in place to ensure that you correct that? The last one, you visited a couple of provinces. I want to have an understanding of your criteria of visiting those provinces. You have not visited Mpumalanga, your outreach. You have not visited Eastern Cape. You have not visited the most important, which is harboring all the challenges and the fears that we are having here in terms of the thing. Why is it that you have not visited those? I'm saying you are an institution in my view. You are an entity in my view, which is very, very important for the survival, the integrity of Africa. And if then some true science, obviously, if then you have not visited these other, can you explain why? Because I've been trying to peruse. My apologies, Chair, it was not my intention to ask so many questions to be long, but it's quite an interesting subject. It's quite an interesting presentation. We have not broadened the impact of NEPAD. I may not have read this, but we are just talking about NEPAD. Whereas NEPAD, for us, for some of us, May it's something that we think that is very it's very important. And the last thing, just the comment, in what the former president of the country is doing, it's just absurd. Of what the former president of the country is doing, which is very important. What's your interaction and your involvement with that? Because it is focusing on the youth, on the young. I see it's of, and even your staff complement. It's a bit young. Maybe it's recycled teenagers like myself. Thank you, Chair.
The next member, please.
Thank you. There's a couple of questions that I'd like to just some clarity on. Who determines your research projects, your topics? I mean, how do you decide? Do any other African governments finance you at all? There's an item here of special project income. I presume that is, you know, from people like Standard Bank and other people, which is what, 780,000. Who are the other people that you get special income from? Giving you some idea of who your projects are. But I'm particularly wanting to know if any other African government actually finances any of your research. I'm also concerned at the lack of interest seem to be shown in your output. You know, you say that people aren't buying books anymore, and your income from your library is 13,000 rand. Is anybody, and your stuff isn't getting used in other sort of periods, it's not being referred to. Who's actually using your material? Who are you actually producing it for? Because if you're just, you know, writing research for the sake of writing research, and it's not getting out there, to me it seems a bit pointless. What are the chances of you actually putting all your research online? Now, I know there's obviously a problem with it being accessible in the rest of Africa because of broadband issues. But would it not be easier to reach people if you just published online and so perhaps have easier access? And then also just a question generally, is a debate going on in the internet community about publicly funded research being made available for free. Now, how does that sit with you guys? Because obviously some of you want to make money out of your research. And there was, some of my questions have already been asked, you see, so I've tried to find other things. Yes, bearing in mind you've had a sort of fairly lackluster year in both income generation and in your material getting out there, can you please explain to me why nearly 900,000 rand was paid out in performance incentives? What are the criteria for those performance incentives and who got them? And I mean, if to me it doesn't seem a particularly successful year, so I'm not quite sure what why those should have been paid. I think that'll do for me. Thank you. One more question that came from your report. Sorry, if I may. You talk about your researchers, leaving and being poached and all that sort of thing. You have a target of 15 researchers and you actually employ 9. But yet your breakdown, your pie chart of employees shows that 70% of your staff are foreign nationals. Now, I would presume that most of your researchers would be foreign nationals because it's in the rest of Africa, or are your foreign nationals in the HR department? Because I don't see how perhaps 9%, or if it's going to take 9% and 11% of your library people, could come to 70% of your staff complement.
Thank you, honourable members. As I said, you know, my first question is, you know, we've got HSRC, and then we've got AISA. Can you clarify us exactly what the role of AISA is as opposed to HSRC in terms of disseminating information to the state but particularly since you are accountable to the department, of Science and Technology. You see, I have in mind these two institutions were actually created by the old government for very strategic purposes. So I'm not sure if that role is still the same or how much you have innovated that the role they were created for. Well, is adapted to what we need these institutions for now. And actually, because ISA was created for a totally different role, and I've not heard how we have adapted it to our role now. You see. So I want you to tell me first that. Secondly, there is a serious problem that's what we're going to talk about. The expenditures which you call employee-related, that's why I say, what does that mean? Because, you know, I've had reports coming from your own institution that why is our committee not correcting the situation where people take money and simply go and spend that money in their countries, because I have been made to understand that there are a lot of foreign researchers in AISA, immigrant researchers, who then take money. I think it's a lot of money. I think per research something like how many thousand? 60,000, eh? Yes, 60,000. And usually, I've been told that the research is to do with Sudan. But these researchers, say it's a Nigerian-born researcher, immigrant researcher, actually, instead of going to do research in Sudan, he will take this 60,000 to Nigeria, and then to stay in Nigeria for many months, obviously using this money, staying and utilizing this 60,000, and then you will dedicate some professor somewhere there in Sudan to give him a report of what is happening along that area, himself sitting in Nigeria. And then he will come back with the notes from whoever he has tasked to do that particular report, and then come back to South Africa for sparing his days with his family and friends and using this money, and come to say that, well, here's the report that I did. When in fact he didn't do anything, he just went to sit in his country and spend the money of the government. And I also know that there was a time when actually there was a very important invitation, I think, somewhere in China, where again, the whole delegation was actually consisting of immigrant researchers from AISA. I don't know whether it was your time, whatever, but they went to China, and when the Chinese asked them, you from South Africa, they said, no, we're not. So the Chinese said, but here we invited the South African delegation because we want to discuss about the details of how to interact between South Africa and us in terms of at least the, sociopolitical matters. They said, no, we are working in South Africa for AISA, but we are not originally from South Africa, And according to the people that gave this report, it was very embarrassing, So I'm trying to ask, how are you addressing this situation? Because if I'm not mistaken, they say, in fact, there is a significant number of immigrant researchers in AISA than the is local. I'm not sure about that, but this is the report that I'm getting. And that, therefore, there is a lot of money that is expended, like you are seeing, doing actually no reward to us. Money being used there for those people to go and stay in their countries and come back. I would like to know exactly how this happened. We said that we will, you must cook us all these questions during lunch. There is one member who has one question. Members, you must really report about the member. Each time one of you then want to come to us at the end, you say that I have wasted a lot of time. You are the one who accused me.
Yeah, I'm
not the one. Okay. Ask for about these questions, come back.